talk about multi-party computation. Now we're in the case where, as one of the questions was, the adversaries are active. They're not doing what they're supposed to in the protocol. And so the work I'm going to talk about today is by a bunch of people. I'm the one in red. And most of these authors are here, except for Avi Natan, who's a student at Hebrew University. Michael Benor just spoke. Claude Crampeau is our section chair, so you know I'll have lots of extra time. And Adam Smith is talking in the afternoon about a computational version of this with two parties. Okay, so first, classical multi-party computation. Well, you heard about that in the last talk, but let me just kind of briefly say what the model is here. So we have a bunch of people, n people, and T of them are cheaters. And those cheaters might be allied with each other, and they might do some kind of arbitrary thing. And you want, roughly speaking, the following condition. So each person has a separate input x sub I that they're putting into this protocol, and that should remain secret, except as implied by the output of the protocol. And so at the end, you want to compute some function f of the various x sub i's. But in general, you could make it even that each player has a different output. So you have f sub I of x sub I. And actually, in the classical case, it makes sense to think of one output that goes maybe to everybody. But in the quantum case, when we're doing a quantum computation, as we will be doing shortly, that doesn't make sense, right? Because we can't take the quantum state and then copy it to everybody. So how does this work when you have cheaters? Well, so the cheater can put in whatever input they like. I mean, they can say, well, if I put in this particular input, you know, it'll cause an overflow that will give me some extra information, even though that's not what their input really is. But once they do that at the beginning, they can't change it later on in the protocol, and they can't cause the computation to give a wrong answer or, as I said, of course, find out anything that they're not supposed to, and they can't even cause it to stop once they put in their inputs initially. Okay, so that's a very strong restriction. And then as resources, well, in classical multi-party computation, we'll assume we have secure channels between any pair of players. And if that's all we have, then the classical results that Michael mentioned say that you can tolerate up to one-third of the players being cheaters. And if you have one additional resource, a broadcast channel, where one player can speak into this broadcast channel and all the other players will hear what he says the same way. They'll get the same thing. So he can't tell different things to different people. Then you can actually do better and tolerate n over 2, or up to n over 2 cheaters. And this is all information theoretic security. So there's no computational assumptions, no memory bounds, nothing like that. And these are the best you can do in that case. And so when we talk about security in this case, we like to define it more rigorously in terms of an ideal protocol. So I'm not quite going to do that here, but here's the basic picture. So here we have a bunch of players, and they're all interacting with this protocol. And we say that the multi-party protocol that we're defining is secure if, as far as the cheaters are concerned, it looks like they're actually interacting with some ideal protocol. And the ideal protocol is very simple. All these players just give their inputs to some trusted third party, or I guess in this case a trusted ninth party. And that trusted third party computes these functions and hands everybody else the appropriate output. Okay? So it's clear in this ideal protocol that no one gets any information they're not supposed to, and that it computes the correct function because, you know, you trust this big box in the middle. And so, as I said, we're saying that this protocol is secure if these cheaters, in this case, Diane, Eve, and Fred, even though they can act together, they can coordinate their inputs, they can do whatever they like, have no way of telling whether they're interacting with the real protocol or trusted protocol with some kind of simulator, making it look like it behaves like the real protocol. So, you know, it's doing all of the various details of this complicated protocol that the trusted third party is just, and then use the trusted third party just to compute the actual function. So this is kind of, I don't know, cryptography meets solipsism, where these cheaters have no way of knowing whether they're in the real world or everything is just a simulation. And so when you have a definition like this, you can prove that these protocols are composable. You can stick them into bigger protocols, and it still works, and so on. Okay, so that's a 30-second overview of the classical result. So what happens when we go to the quantum world? So now my goal here is going to do some quantum computation. So each of the players has an input, which is now a quantum state, which might be entangled with the outside world, of course, or with each other, or anything. And they want to put these into the protocol. So again, we can imagine defining security by an ideal protocol where they give them to a trusted third party. And the trusted third party does some unitary gate or even a CP map, gets some arbitrary quantum computation on it, and then hands back to each player another quantum state that's the output. So of course, again, we want to figure out how many computers we can tolerate. So fortunately, you can use techniques of fault-tolerant computation and quantum error-correcting codes to say a lot of stuff about this. And using those techniques and adapting the classical multi-party results, three of us, so Adam, Claude, and I, showed a few years ago that you can do these secure multi-party computations if you have up to n over 6 computers, less than n over 6 computers. So that shows at least it's possible in principle, but of course there's still a gap between that and the classical result. And unfortunately, it seems like we wouldn't be able to get up to the classical result, because when we're using these techniques of quantum error-correcting codes, we also know there are bounds on quantum error-correcting codes. And so in particular, here's the following very simple argument. So there's a kind of general result that if you look at the conditions of quantum error correction, or indeed of classical error correction, you can see that correcting T errors in known locations, erasure errors, is the same, correcting T errors in unknown locations is the same as correcting 2 T errors in known locations. Okay? And roughly speaking, that's because, you have to compare 2 different possible errors. And if you both know in the same case, they kind of end up as just being 1 error. But if they could be in different places, then that's kind of like 2 errors. Anyway, if you look at the equations, it's very, very straightforward. So given this result, and the next one, which says that there's a no-cloning bound that applies in the quantum case. And so clearly this is what's different from the classical case. The no-cloning bound says, well, we can't correct more than half erasure errors on a code. So if we have n players, and we could correct for half of them being absent, well, then what we could do is we could take a quantum state, we could encode it in this error-correcting code, and then, the left half of the room would go off and they're correcting for the erasure of the right half of the room, right half of the room, left half of the room, whatever. And so they would get one copy of the state, and this side of the room, they're correcting for the erasure of that side of the room. And so you'd get another copy of the state. And then you have 2 copies, and that would be cloning, which we know is not possible. So that says that there's no way you can make an error-correcting code that's going to correct up to half of the registers being wrong, even when you know where they are. Okay, so putting these together, that says that no quantum error-correcting code can correct unknown errors on 1/4 of locations. So it's clear, if you think about this, that means that we're not going to be able to do multi-party computation with 1/4 or more of the players being cheaters, right? Because, so you have 4 players, one of them is a cheater. How do you even reconstruct the state at the end? You don't know who the cheater is. And so that cheater could introduce any kind of error, and you have no way of correcting it. Okay? So we wrote that in our paper. We said there's an upper bound of 1/4, and it turns out that's wrong. And the reason is a little bit subtle, but it's because that argument only applies if you want to exactly correct the errors. Turns out that this first condition, that the connection between erasure errors and general errors only applies for exact correction. And for approximate correction, it doesn't apply anymore. And in fact, there's a way, if you're willing to tolerate some small error, in fact, it can be made arbitrarily small, to make error-correcting codes which can correct up to half, less than half, but up to that, of the registers being wrong. Okay? And the idea there is to use quantum authentication, which I'll talk about in the next slide, and that can effectively turn a general error in an unknown location into an erasure error, one in a known location. And we do have erasure codes that can correct this many errors. And the other interesting feature of this that we're going to see a lot more of in the later slides is that this quantum authentication protocol is a cryptographic protocol, and so it uses keys, in this case classical bit strings. And so we have to share those classical bit strings using a classical protocol. In this case, just a classical protocol that'll kind of correct errors and prevent the cheaters from learning the other keys. But later on, we'll need more stringent properties. But luckily, we're going to use the classical multi-party computation to do all this classical key management. So before I say authentication, I just want to make a general comment, which is that if you go through all the various steps we're going to need in this ultimate quantum multi-party computation protocol, there's a lot of these things where there's some problem. It looks like it might be a fatal problem, but we can overcome it in some way. And so that's why, going back, that's why I highlighted this fortunately, unfortunately, fortunately. There's a kid's game, kind of a storytelling game, where a bunch of people sit around in a circle, and they tell a story one sentence at a time. First player says, fortunately, blah, blah, blah. You know, fortunately, Alice made it to the airport on time. And next person continues sentence, unfortunately, her plane was delayed for 5 hours. Third person, fortunately, she could get another plane, etc. And so they go around telling the story. And the protocol that I'm going to show you turns out to be a lot like this. So we'll be writing a story as we go along with various reversals of fortune as we go. So quantum authentication, what is that? So authentication, classical or quantum, is a fairly simple definition, intuitively, which is that Alice wants to send something to Bob, and Bob wants to know that it really came from Alice. It hasn't been changed en route. And in this case, in the quantum case, we'll define it in terms of a trusted third party, the same kind of ideal protocol. Alice will take her quantum state, she'll send it to the trusted third party. The trusted third party will take an input from an adversary, Eve, and Eve is not able to look at the, Eve is not able to change the state, but she's able to say, I don't want it to go through. Okay? She'll say, either you can send it on to Bob, or you should abort, and send Bob something that's saying that you're doing that. And so the trusted third party will do one of those two things. So classically, you define this a little bit differently. You'd say that Eve would get a copy of the state, and then she could decide whether to abort it or not. But quantum mechanically, we don't do that. And that turns out to be really essential in the definition of quantum authentication, that a quantum authentication protocol has to encrypt the state as well as protecting it against changes. Or in fact, encrypting it is necessary to protect it against changes. And that's simply because, the actual proof of that is a little complicated, but the intuitive idea is very simple, which is that if Eve could learn about the state, she could make a measurement, then that measurement itself would change the state. Okay, so of course this is a little more complicated because you have to say, well, she can't make it without being detected. In any case, it turns out that it really is necessary. As I said, this protocol uses a classical bit string as a key. So there's a shared key between Alice and Bob that enables them to do this in a real protocol rather than just an ideal protocol. And this classical key consists of two parts. And so one of those parts is basically used to determine a quantum error detecting code that's going to detect whether Eve has made any errors. And another part does this encryption. So that uses the private quantum channel that you heard about, was it on Tuesday? So I didn't put the letters here. This work on quantum authentication is by Barnum, Kripo, me, Adam Smith, and Elaine Tapp. Okay. So using this quantum authentication, we can take one of these quantum erasure codes and we authenticate each of the registers. Right? And we distribute this to our end players. And if one of them wants to change the state, well, they don't know how to do that because they can't break the quantum authentication. Okay? So if somebody tries to change the state, they'll be detected. And that makes their error an erasure error. So you can throw out the ones that don't pass, the registers that don't pass the authentication, and the remaining ones, since there's less than half the cheaters, will be correctable by the erasure correcting code. Okay. So now I'm ready to move on to the new stuff. Unfortunately, the protocol, as I maybe implied before, is a little bit complicated. So I'm not going to give you all the details of it. I'll just kind of give you an overview, at least to start with. And then if I have maybe some more time at the end, I'll finish the overview. Anyway, for now, it's just a very high-level overview. So the first goal is kind of the main goal, the hardest part. It's to give something called verifiable quantum secret sharing. And so the idea there is we don't care about really doing a computation. All we want to do is share a state. So we'll have some player takes a quantum state, and they want to distribute it among all the other players in such a way, and remember, some of these other players are cheaters too. Well, the dealer might or might not be a cheater. If the dealer is not a cheater, then it's very straightforward. Then you say, well, the state should be shared, and at the end, somebody should be able to reconstruct it, given all the shares, no matter what the cheaters do. If the dealer is a cheater, well, then you have kind of the condition I mentioned before, which is that in the sharing phase, the dealer can share whatever phase they, whatever state they want. But if the dealer is not caught during that sharing phase, then the state is kind of fixed. And that at the end of the protocol, when you get together all these shares, only one state will be reconstructed, the state that the dealer originally shared. Okay? And then once you have that, then it makes sense to define the next step, the multi-party computation. And that's relatively straightforward, given that original verifiable quantum secret sharing protocol. And then, of course, it's what I said before. Everybody shares their inputs using this verifiable quantum secret sharing, and then you do some computation on those inputs and give each person the appropriate output to reconstruct. Okay? So, back to our story. So, unfortunately, when we have this approximate error-correcting code, well, we can't use the straightforward fault-tolerant techniques anymore because now we have all the shares being authenticated. And it seems like this should be an insuperable problem, right? Because, well, the whole point of authentication is to prevent someone from changing the states. But we want to do a computation, so we want to change the states. So it seems like that's a serious problem. But, of course, it's not. Fortunately, we can get around this by changing the classical keys at the same time as we change the quantum state. And, of course, we can do that because the classical keys are going to be shared using a classical multi-party computation. So we can do any computation we want on those without revealing any extra information. Roughly speaking, how we're going to do this is to put some additional restriction on the authentication codes we use. So normally, when we talk about techniques of fault tolerance, we're doing gates between two quantum states that are encoded in different blocks of the same code, same quantum error-correcting code. And in general, if the quantum error-correcting codes are totally different codes, we wouldn't know how to do an interaction between them. So this could create a problem if every time we authenticate a state, we use totally different keys. So this is why it's important that the key is in two parts. One part is a quantum error detecting code, but we can think of it, I mean, it's mathematically the same as an error correcting code. And so we're going to use that part of the key again and again. So when one person shares a state, he's going to use that same key K that determines the code every time. But he'll use different encryption keys, X1 and X2, X3, X4, for every state he shares. And the advantage of that is because we'll arrange it so that the whole state is encrypted, so that somebody looking at the state won't be able to find out anything about this key K. All you know is because the protocol specifies it, that the different blocks are using the same K. Okay? And then, of course, as I said, we're sharing these classical keys using multi-party computation, and we're going to leave K the same when we do these computations and change X1 and X2. Okay? So using the techniques of fault tolerance and the idea I mentioned on the last slide, we can do Clifford group gates, which I guess Michael talked about some already. Let me just say what they are in this case. So we're, in order to make these work, we're not dealing over binary qubits, but higher dimensional qubits, mod p things. And so the Clifford group consists of, well, it's generated by, anyway, the Fourier transform, which is, you know, the usual discrete Fourier transform in p dimensions. This nonlinear phase gate, so it takes, it's a diagonal gate, it takes the state J to a phase that's, you know, J squared, omega to the J squared. And some gate, the obvious analog of the controlled mod, it takes JK to J, K plus J. And then we'll also allow measurement, say, in the computational basis. Okay, and all of these things can be done just by doing gates between two things. So this is just between authenticated states. So if we take two states authenticated with the same code, key K, but different encryption keys, we can do gates between them using just other Clifford group gates and changing the classical keys, the encryption keys, X. Okay? And there's actually one bonus feature we get out of here. In the measurement, when we do the classical multi-party computation, well, if you measure one of these quantum authenticated states given an appropriate code, oh, I should say this doesn't work for an arbitrary code. This, we have to define a specific code that allows this. But given these codes, when you measure them, if you measure each of the individual qubits of this authenticated state, you get a classically authenticated state. And then the classical multi-party computation can check that authentication is correct. So you get a little bonus piece of information when you do this measurement. Okay? And that's actually pretty important for one of the other details later that I probably won't say much about. Okay. Unfortunately, of course, there had to be a downside to this. This is not all the gates we need. Otherwise, we'd basically be done at this point. Well, not quite done. But unfortunately, this is only enough to do kind of interesting but not computationally very powerful set of quantum gates. Fortunately, it's enough to do the verifiable quantum secret sharing. And so to do verifiable quantum secret sharing, we don't even need this gate, actually. The only we need is the Fourier transform, the sum, and the measurement, and the Pauli operators, which kind of come out of those automatically. And so what we're going to do is we're going to stick with Clifford group gates till we're done with verifiable quantum secret sharing, and then for the very last step, we'll add in other gates, the Toffoli gate, for instance. Okay. So let's move on. So suppose we have an honest dealer. Now we're kind of okay because we could share a state using one of these approximate error correcting codes, and then we could do Clifford group gates between these codes using basically the technique I said before. But that's not going to work if the dealer is dishonest, right? There's lots of things that could happen. For instance, the dealer could give honest players states that aren't correctly authenticated. And then when you tried to reconstruct the state, well, you'd find some that were incorrectly authenticated because the cheaters tried to change them. And you might find some that are incorrectly authenticated, but they're coming from honest players. And so you could have too many states fail the authentication, you won't be able to correct for the erasure. So we need some way to check that each player is getting a correctly authenticated state. So if you look at, yeah, so there's, I mean, there's lots of other things that could happen, but let's deal with that problem first. If you look at the classical protocols, of course, there's kind of some analogous problem that arises. The classical protocols don't work quite this way, but they're kind of have to deal with the same kinds of problems. And classically, the way to deal with this is to sign states and then distribute them multiple copies to different people. And that way the honest players can kind of check that they're getting the right state. But obviously that's not going to work in the quantum case, because again, it requires copying. So unfortunately, the no cloning theorem prevents us from using this solution. Fortunately, there's a solution, which is that we can use quantum teleportation to delay distributing the actual state until we've already checked that the authentications are correct. So the idea is the dealer, who might be dishonest, is going to distribute authenticated zeros to everybody. And that is the same for everybody, so they can now check if they're correct. And if they're not correct, then, you know, we can reveal the dealer as a cheater, fix things up in various ways, which I'll get to in a second. And then once we've done that, everybody has an authenticated state, the dealer will teleport the state he wants to share into these authenticated states. So how do we do that? Well, okay, so the first thing we do is the dealer will create a whole bunch of zero states authenticated using his appropriate keys that he has chosen. Remember, using, again, the same key K each time, determining the code, but a different encryption key for each copy of this authenticated zero state. And he'll give a bunch of them to each player. Okay? And then the players do some tests on these states, on the various zero states, to see whether they're really zero states and whether they're authenticated correctly. And so it turns out you can do that by doing some kind of random sum gates between them, doing some measurements, do this in the computational basis, the Fourier basis. Remember, the measurement, doing the measurement checks whether the authentication is correct. So this tells us both whether this is a correct zero and correct authentication. So now each player, either they have zero states which they've decided have passed the test, or they have zero states they decided have not passed the test. So if they pass, then that player is happy. They're ready for the next stage. If they haven't passed, then they complain to the group as a whole, which they can do, of course, using the classical computation. And, of course, if there's lots and lots of players that are complaining, say more than T, then we know the dealer must be a cheater. Because the cheaters might be complaining whether or not the dealer is honest. But the honest players will only be complaining if the dealer is a cheater. So if there's lots and lots of players complaining, we know the dealer is a cheater, we kick him out and we use somebody else to create his inputs. If the dealer is not a cheater, or at least we haven't detected the dealer as a cheater, that means that there's a majority of players who are convinced that they have correct states. So they have lots of extra copies of these states because the dealer sent a lot of copies in the first round. And so they'll send them out to everybody else, to the people who complained. And so now everybody should be able to, and they have to do some more checking, of course. But now at the end, everyone should be convinced that they have states that have been correctly authenticated by the original dealer. Okay. But now, of course, they're just zero states. Nevertheless, as I said, we can use teleportation to go to the next step. So what happens now is that each player, they'll take two of these authenticated zero states and do a sum between them. Remember, that's a Clifford group gate. Oh, sorry, a Fourier transform and a sum, so two Clifford group gates, making an EPR pair. And they'll send half of this EPR pair back to the dealer. The dealer knows what code he used to encrypt it, what authentication code, actually. So he'll decode that. And now he can teleport his quantum state through this EPR pair. And his half is unencoded, but the other half is encoded. So the state that comes out at the other end is encoded. And so another detail, there's a poly matrix that gets involved, but you can fold that into the classical computation. Okay, so now we have a way for a dealer to send states to each of the other players in such a way that each player is convinced he has a correctly authenticated state. If the dealer is honest, then the state each of these players has received is the state that he actually sent. If the dealer is dishonest, well, then you don't really know. I mean, it's still some state, of course. The main condition we need is that because the state is correctly authenticated, if the dealer is honest and the receiver is dishonest, the dishonest player can't change the state. There's only the state that he got from the dealer. He can't put a different authenticated state in there. You might worry about that in the EPR pair stuff, but that's not going to happen. Okay. So, that was only the first step. Unfortunately, there's other things that dealer can do to cheat, so we have to go to a more complicated protocol. And what we're going to do is we're going to do weak secret sharing. And the reason we can do this is that, fortunately, there's only a limited number of cheaters. And so those cheaters, here's a particular cheating strategy you might worry about. If the dealer is dishonest, well, he can tell the other cheaters what key he used to authenticate the states. And so now they can change the states without setting off the authentication alarm, right? So they can create errors without revealing where those errors are. But luckily, since there's only a limited number of them, they can't take this erasure code and, well, so it's not erasure code anymore, really. It's kind of a code correcting general errors. But the error will still show up as an error. So they can't create a state that looks like it should be correct. Okay? So what this is a protocol called weak secret sharing. And so I've kind of drawn a version of the ideal protocol for it to understand more clearly what it does. So it's something that consists of two phases. So there's a sharing phase and an opening phase. In the sharing phase, the dealer will send a state to the trusted third party or refuse to send the state. He can say, well, I'm not going to participate. And if the dealer refuses to participate, then during the sharing phase still, the trusted third party will tell the receiver, or in this case, the set of players, that something is wrong. Okay, that the dealer has refused to participate. And the dealer is then revealed as a cheater. But if he doesn't do that, then the trusted third party has the state. And so then we go on to the opening phase, some later point in time. And at this point, the dealer gets another option. Or in this case, I guess, the dealer plus the coalition of other cheaters. And they can say, no, we don't want to open the state. So if they say that, well, then again, the trusted third party will tell the receiver they've refused to open the state. And in that case, again, you know that the dealer is a cheater. But if they do decide to open the state, then the state that the receiver gets is the state that the dealer sent. Okay? So basically, this is kind of like bit commitment, but it's, of course, a multi-party protocol. And, I guess it really is bit commitment, right? There's the initial phase, the dealer shares a state, and he, now, at the end, he can't open any state other than that state he shared at the beginning. Okay? But he can refuse to open it at the end. Whereas later on, with the verifiable quantum secret sharing, he won't even have that option. Okay? So, roughly speaking, here's how you do that. The dealer will send out, so we're going to now have to use the approximate error correcting code. The dealer will take his state, and instead of sharing the state that he wants to, he'll put it aside for the moment, and he'll create an encoded zero state using this approximate error correcting code. Okay, so that's great. But again, remember, we can't just have him send things directly to the other players because then we don't know if they've been authenticated correctly. So we have to use this verifiable authentication I talked about before, where he sends authenticated zeros to each player and they check them and yada, yada, yada. And so then using that, he teleports the shares of this approximate error correcting code to each of these other players. So now they each have correctly authenticated states, which are shares, should be shares of the zero state. Okay? And he does it actually a bunch of times. But now we don't know whether these states are authenticated zero states or not, shared, so we have to do some test. And it works in kind of the same way as before. They do some gates between random zero states and some measurements to test whether he's really shared what he's supposed to have shared. Okay? Which, again, is not his actual shared state. This is just supposed to just be zero states. Okay? And once we've shared all of that, now the honest players are convinced that if they were to open these states, they would get zeros. And so now they can do the Clifford group gates again, using the same kind of techniques as before, to create EPR pairs and send half of the EPR pair back to the dealer. The dealer decodes and teleports again into this shared state. Okay? So now at the end of this protocol, assuming the dealer hasn't, you know, refused to participate at some point, there should be a shared state which, if you reconstruct it, would get the original state. Of course, this is still only weak secret sharing because of what I said. The dealer could tell the other cheaters what authentication code he used, and so they together they can create something that can't be reconstructed using the regular proximate quantum error correcting code reconstructing procedure. Okay? So that's weak secret sharing. But as I said, we want something slightly stronger than that, verifiable quantum secret sharing. And so basically the idea here is to do weak secret sharing twice. And so the ideal protocol looks very, very similar to the weak secret sharing case, right? Remember, here's the weak secret sharing. The dealer, we had a sharing phase and an opening phase. So we have that here too. In the sharing phase, of course, the dealer can refuse to participate. But if he sends a state, and if he does, that you tell the receivers that. If he does share a state, that goes to the trusted third party. And then during the opening phase, the trusted third party will send it on to the receiver, whether the dealer wants it or not. Okay? So the difference between this and the weak secret sharing is the dealer can't back out at the end here. And the way we do that is we do weak secret sharing twice. Okay? And the reason is that in the weak secret sharing, weak secret sharing is kind of twice. Let's do it two layers of weak secret sharing. So the dealer shares a state using weak secret sharing, and then each of those players has a share that they've received as part of this weak secret sharing, and they share it again using weak secret sharing to everybody. Okay? And the reason this works for the verifiable secret sharing is that, remember, in the weak secret sharing, if you refuse to open, that reveals that the dealer is a cheater. Okay? So that acts the same way as the authentication, basically. In that, if each of these shares, it can only be opened in one way, and if we fail to open it, then that means that that player is a cheater at the second level, the lower level. Okay? And so we know that some players are cheaters, and the other shares have been opened in the correct way. Okay? And that's what we need to be able to do this approximate quantum error correction reconstruction. Okay, so unfortunately, so that's the verifiable quantum secret sharing, which, as I said, is the main part here. But unfortunately, we're not done, because we can still only do Clifford group gates. And in fact, there's even a more serious problem. We can still only do Clifford group gates between things that were shared using the same authentication code, right? And different dealers have different authentication codes. That's important, because otherwise, you know, they would be able to cheat on each other's shared states. But fortunately, we don't need the top-level authentication anymore. Because as I said, this lower-level weak secret sharing takes its place. Okay? So the shares are still authenticated because the lower-level weak secret sharing has authentication. But the upper-level authentication, we can get rid of it. And because we've chosen a particular code, it can be decoded using just Clifford group gates, which we know how to do. So we do a series of Clifford group gates to get rid of that top-level authentication. And so now, everything is shared using the same authentication codes, because each of the lower-level weak secret sharing uses the same authentication from time to time. And so now we can perform Clifford group gates between any shared states, whether they came from the same dealer or from different dealers. Okay, so now you can see we're almost there. Now we can do an arbitrary Clifford group quantum computation. So unfortunately, as I said before, that's not enough. It's not universal. In fact, Clifford group gates can be classically simulated, and of course, we don't know exactly what the point of this computation is, but maybe it's to do something that factoring or something that's classically hard. So we need other gates. So the Toffoli gate is a usual example. So the Toffoli gate is a 3 qubit gate, that takes three registers IJK to IJ and then K plus IJ. So basically this is some generalization of the AND gate. Fortunately, we have techniques of fault-tolerant computation that tell us how to do this fault-tolerantly. And we can adapt those in this case. And in fact, all we need is Clifford group operations and, as Michael mentioned, this state. A sum over AB of a three-register state, AB and the AND of AB, or the product mod P. So how are we going to get this? Well, one thing we could do is we could just randomly pick some player and tell them to create this state and then share it using verifiable quantum secret sharing. But the problem with that should be obvious, right? Unfortunately, we might choose a cheater to create these states. And then the Toffoli states that we've created will be wrong, and that could cause errors in the computation. Okay. Fortunately, we can solve that problem too. So what we can do is we can probabilistically check if a Toffoli gate state is correct or not. Okay, and we can do that by making some measurements. So if you go back to here, you can look at this state and say, well, if we measure it in the standard basis, well, it's clear that this should be of this form, A, B, and then this third register should be the product of the first two. And if it's not of that form, then the state is clearly wrong. And of course, that's not sufficient. We also have to show that it's a superposition, but by doing appropriate other things, you can solve that, you can check for that too. Okay? So that's a good thing. So we'll have random player create a bunch of these states, and then we'll check some random subset of them in these various possible ways. And so if he's created perfect states, he'll always pass the test. If there's some errors, then he has some chance of getting caught. Unfortunately, doing that only gives you polynomial accuracy, right? Because if he makes only one bad state, it might be you don't check that one, or you do the wrong check on it. And you might, in fact, end up using it in the computation. Okay. Fortunately, we can again use techniques of fault tolerance to do some kind of distillation procedure that will take states that are below some error threshold and make them exponentially better. Okay? And then once... Whoops. What did I do? Yeah. Okay. So once we've done that, we finally are done. We have secure multi-party computation. We can do Clifford group gates, we can do Toffoli gates, so we can do universal quantum computation. We've done this with only assuming an honest majority of players, plus secure multi-party classical computation. Okay? So if we have a classical broadcast channel, we're restricted to one-third. Sorry, if we have a classical broadcast channel, we can tolerate up to one-half players. But if we don't, then we can't even do the classical multi-party computation. The quantum part is fine, but since we don't have the classical part, we then require less than one-third cheaters. So I've summarized all of the reversals of fortune that I discussed over the course of this talk, but unfortunately it takes three slides just to describe them. So as you can see, it's a somewhat involved protocol. And unfortunately, I don't have time to go into the details of all of these little pieces, but maybe from your point of view, that's fortunate, because I'd otherwise be going on for hours. Fortunately, there's a paper that is going to appear in Proceedings of Fox in, you know, a few weeks that will maybe help you fill in some of these details. But unfortunately, there's a page limit for that, and so even there, you're restricted in what you can learn. But hopefully, the rest of us will manage to eventually create a full version of the paper to put on QuantPH. I think fortunately for all of us, that's all I have to say. Thanks. Well, you can always measure it if you want, right? You can have each player measure their share. I don't think that really matters, in fact. I mean... Yeah, of course. Yeah. So, okay. So, I guess what I didn't say, but I believe is true, is that the classical multi-party computation protocols work just the same against quantum adversaries. I have to confess I haven't actually checked that, but maybe one of my co-authors, yeah. I mean, those are somewhat involved too, not nearly as involved as this one, but basically the security conditions there are relatively straightforward in the sense that you don't have to do rewinding or anything like that. So the quantum adversaries don't really help beat those.
Indication of what Daniel is saying is that you essentially do use a classical erasure correcting code to